Welcome back from the break. It's 5 minutes gone past the 6 o'clock, the 5 o'clock hour. I beg your pardon. It's still Hard Facts, 99.3 Nigeria Info. It's time for us to get into the big hard facts for today. And my guest is the national president of the Social Democratic Party, SDP, Shehu Musa Gabam. He's going to be joining us live via Zoom as we look at the ongoing probe of the former governor of Kogi State, Yahaya Bello. Let's talk about the most recent events that have unfolded as a result of EFCC's probe on the former governor. For those of you who are yet to, you know, follow the stories, over the weekend, the EFCC made it public that the American International School Abuja has refunded the fees paid for the children of Yahaya Bello, the immediate past governor of Kogi State. According to that report by the EFCC, they say that Bello paid the amount of $760,910 in advance as school fees for five of his children from the coffers of the Kogi State government. The children are in grade levels 2 to 8 at the school. The money, according to the EFCC, has been paid into public accounts. Dele Oyewale, EFCC spokesperson, told the cable newspaper on Saturday over the weekend. The anti-graft agency had asked the school to refund the money. Now, in response to a letter addressed to the Lagos Zonal Commander of the EFCC, the school said $845,852 was paid in as tuition since the 7th of September 2021 to date. Now, that the American school said the sum to be refunded was $760,910 because it had deducted educational services already rendered. It's interesting, of course, because many had questioned the EFCC's push against the former governor. In fact, many people have said that, this might be a witch hunt or there might be the hand of Esau in this particular matter. But then, of course, the bigger question today is, this money that has been refunded, is it the game changer? Although, in a swift response, the spokesperson for the former governor had said that the propaganda, according to them, that has been put out by the EFCC was mere slander. In fact, they have literally set aside what the EFCC has said. They do not consider it as truth. But my guest is going to help us make sense of what's been happening, the politics around it, the shorty of EFCC being able to probe and drive this matter home, and of course, if Nigerians should waste their time to pay attention to this. My guest once again is the national chairman of the Social Democratic Party, SDP, Shehu Musa Gabam. Mr. Gabam, it's so good to have you join us and welcome to the show. Good evening.
My great pleasure. Good afternoon and good afternoon to everyone.
Great. I'm sure that you obviously, I mean, I've seen your reactions to what's been happening, the EFCC, Yahaya Bello, the fight against corruption. It's not just Yahaya Bello. I just put that out there just as a basis for this conversation. Several other people have been doxed, like Hadi Sirika, the former Minister for Aviation, and many others. The EFCC seems to be out to, I'm going to use the word loosely, for blood, for those of who they think or suspect have stolen from the coffers of our country. But the bigger question, Mr. Gabam, here is, for you who's been around the political scene for as long as you have been, since the EFCC came into being under the Obasanjo administration, how well has the fight against corruption taken, played out? Many people would say that the EFCC has become a guard dog of whatever government is in power, and they go after their opponents. What do you have to say about that?
Well, first and foremost, you know, it has been part of our characteristics as a citizen to see anything good.
Oh, my goodness. Your internet is very bad. We can barely hear you. Your internet is breaking. We can't hear you. Maybe we should try again. Try again. Oh, no. Oh, no. Mr. Gamba, I'm going to advise that you log out of the meeting and log back in because we can barely hear you. Your audio is cracking, and I guess that it's a drag from the network connection. So if you can leave and come back in, we'd appreciate that. Yes. If you can go out of the meeting and come back in because it's breaking. We can barely hear you. It's really, really bad. If you can leave and come back in, it will work for us. So just leave the meeting and then log back in. Maybe hopefully we'll be able to correct it or check your internet settings because that's why we're unable to hear you. All right, we're still going to be delving into this conversation of, you know, the EFCC and its fight against financial crimes. Many people over the years, I mean, we've seen, if we start the list, I have a list that I've continuously looked at of Nigerian politicians that have been tried under the EFCC Act of financial crimes, of corruption, stealing from the state or federation's coffers. And it's gone on for years. But the bigger question for the average Nigerian is, what's the percentage of these politicians who have necessarily been tried, probed, and they've gone to jail? And of course, done time, and all those monies taken from them. Because again, emphasis on the monies. I do remember that Joshua Dariye, if I'm not mistaken, recently was pardoned under the Buhari administration. That's one person that many would say, well, went to jail because of the crimes that he committed. But then there's several others. The Buhari administration came into power and then came with the whistleblower thing. And they did say that, you know, they even came up with the slap on the wrist sort of. If you stole, let's say, 50 billion and you brought at least 20, would give you a slap on the wrist. And many Nigerians kicked against it, saying this is not necessarily a fight against corruption, being that the Buhari administration came into power on a tripod of, you know, fighting against corruption, putting an end to insecurity, and of course, empowering and employing young people. But I don't know if they really successfully did anything in that regard, because many people queried how they went about it. And here we are in 2024, still having a conversation about the level of corruption, financial crimes that have continuously come to play under the Buhari administration, under the Jonathan administration, and even under the Obasanjo administration. Back with us is the national chairman of the Social Democratic Party, Mr. Shehu Musa Gabba. Mr. Gabba, can you hear me now? And can you talk? Let me hear you.
Yeah, clearly.
Perfect.
I hope I'm clear now.
Yes, you are. Perfect. Now we can hear you. Great. You can take on. You can take on the question.
Yeah, like I'm saying, you know, it has been part of our system or tradition or characteristics as a nation, you know, to take everything down. No matter how good the system is, we develop a habit as a nation, you know, to deal with institutions that somehow along the line tempered or step on toes, you know, with few people who consider themselves above the law. They are indispensable. EFCC is an act of National Assembly. It was product of National Assembly. So it's a product of the law. And they've been empowered to deal with issue of crime and criminalities. And of course, there's no perfect system. As a nation, we are struggling to be on our feet. The pillars of the country is still very weak. Now, from the foundation of the EFCC to the massive effort made by the pioneer chairman of EFCC, Nuhu Ribadu, from the audacious decision they have taken going after some of the top shots that are above board, including the former IG of police, you know that the institution was established purposely to deal with some of these people who feel that they are too vicious that nobody can dare them. And of course, that do not attract good thing for EFCC. And later on, the pioneer chairman was also hunted. He ran for safety. He was on exile. Somebody else was appointed. So if you look at the history of EFCC, it's one in, one out unceremoniously. That's number one. So naturally, the institution has been affected. The ability of the institution to do investigation professionally and otherwise have been affected over a period of time, because we are not allowed to develop a system, to develop a training program and counter-training program.
So, for that,
are you hearing me?
Yes. We lost you for a second, but go ahead.
Yeah, so for that...
Oh, dear.
...analyze or assess his personality and give him some sort of stigma around him, so he cannot be able to function properly. Now, to summarize all this leading to the issue we are having, the current chairman of EFCC conducted a press conference. For me, being the chairman of EFCC and also the Information Act, it demands that he should be transparent in the way and the manner he handled investigations, because previous officers were accused of hiding information willingly, not under any compulsion, and then explain to the journalists what is transpiring or what transpired in the past and the situation they are facing with the former governor of Kogi State. And even the gesture that they went further to do, the generosity of placing a call on him. And, you know, and of course, the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, and the way he was vilified, the way people took him to cleaners, I think it's unfair. It's trying to undermine the institution. It's trying to stop the institution from functioning. It's trying to let the institution know that we will not support you. You cannot carry on doing something that is diligent when Nigerian funds are being stolen away by a few people who are privileged to be in office. More fundamentally to me, he said that, look, he is no longer after any individual or political figure. He is after the leakages in the institution. How do you deal with these leakages so that to prevent anybody who happens to be there from using the same leakages in the institution to siphon the public funds?
Hmm.
So, you know, you can't have it perfect. And no matter how perfect you are, people will come after you. And that is why I advise the EFCC chairman to ignore the negativities and just push on the positivities to make sure that the desire changes. The transparency of the investigation is extremely very important. And that will give that institution further credibility. Anything short of shortening the investigation to please anyone, including the government in power, for whatever political reasons, that should not be him, because he will write his own history. And of course, history will record him in the way and the manner he conducted his own investigation. So he is doing very well. He should ignore all those criticisms that have been associated. There's no perfection anywhere. EFCC cannot be a perfect institution. Neither do we expect to have a perfect chairman.
Hmm.
But as we are growing, we are discovering mistakes. We'll be strengthening, correcting those mistakes to make our institution very, very viable and have the capacity to create deterrence.
I love how you put it succinctly. But like I said in my opening, it's very difficult to convince the average Nigerian who's an onlooker of the fact that EFCC, under any of this administration's prior... after the Obasanjo administration, is capable of really doing its job without fear of favor. Like you and I saw what happened to Magu unceremoniously. He was kicked out of that office. And we've seen many people act in a way where we thought that they were going to do or accomplish many things, but then they didn't. For example, I'm looking at a report here in my hand of 11, forgotten cases of corruption by former Nigerian state governors. And the list is long. We have the likes of Governor Obiano. Like I mentioned, there's Joshua Dariye. He and someone else were pardoned by former President Buhari before he left office. And many people also queried, why the timing, because it was close to an election cycle and many people thought that he was going to run for office. Especially, in fact, your party was fingered as one of the parties that he might be running on their platform, I remember, just before the 2023 elections. And we've seen these media trials go on and on and on. They've played up our emotions so much that we thought that something would come out of it. But at the end of the day, these guys are walking around free. We saw what happened to Rochas Okorocha. We saw how they broke down the walls in his house and then they came for him. We still haven't gotten to the bottom of that particular matter. And the truth is, there are several other people who are in this category, or maybe even worse, that Nigerians hope that the EFCC will dock or prosecute to the latter, following the book, the due process. But as we speak, there is also a sitting governor, or a certain former governor, who has a perpetual injunction. You cannot try him. You cannot take him to court and ask him for the monies that he stole from the state. And this man's wife is a judge. So is his daughter. So it makes the process again in itself look like it's a game of making us think that they're working, but they're not working. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, you know, it's a very complicated situation, but let me tell you this. The EFCC chairman was appointed by the executive arm of the government. Just the way people vilified and cut the, you know, cutting the INEC chairman neck into pieces. It's also a product of the executive. All the top officers of INEC are product of executives. The same thing with the EFCC. They are all product of executives. So long as executive is in charge of appointing people that ought to come from an independent body, you know, go through the National Assembly to do their job diligently. And then the executive have no power to remove them. Unless something happened, the National Assembly will have an oversight function to look at issues thoroughly and then remove them. You cannot stop executive interference in this kind of situation. Because if you look at the entire scenario that you narrated, is the interference of the executive and the judiciary. And once the executive and the judiciary are not neutral on issue, there's no way you can get justice. Because if the executive takes side and the judiciary decided not to take side, you will certainly see justice. But in the system, in the judicial system that we live today, what we have experienced and still experiencing in dispensing justice in Nigeria, I really cannot see how far EFCC can go, no matter how strong the character that is there as a chairman of the EFCC. The processes of frustration is extremely very high. And his ability to go through that process and prosecute is extremely very difficult. Because those powerful forces also have an inroad in the judiciary to truncate those processes. Mm. So it's a complicated situation, like I've said. Once the pillars of the nations are weak, the ability for security agencies to conduct thorough investigation is very, very slim. They will do a ceremonial activities sort of, look, we are determined, we'll do this, we'll do that. I mean, one of the biggest that is very daring as the chairman of EFCC, there was Nungri Badu, was very, very daring. But at the end of the day, he ended up in exile. Subsequently, the other people, look at how Magu, you mentioned, was just thrown out. Look at the former AIG, the very excellent lady chairman of EFCC, how she was also humiliated out of the office. So every chairman that is there must act cautiously. So his ability to relax and perform his function diligently without fear or favor is no longer there, because he will wake up one morning, he has been removed. Look at how Bawa was just removed, unceremoniously. You know, just overnight, he has been removed, he was detained. And up to today, there was no reason being explained to Nigeria why he was removed. Now, they brought the current EFCC chairman, who is trying to be cautious, trying to follow the due process, trying to say, look, it is not about a political figure. It's about the process or the institutions that have been weakened by same who? By same executive. Because if you minus corruption in executive, you will have a corrupt-free nation by every definition. Corruption is being championed by executive.
Yeah.
And every ramification.
We have to go on a break. So, we have to go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll be talking more on this issue of fighting financial crime. It's still Hard Facts, 99.3 Nigeria Info. And we're still talking about the EFCC and fighting economic and financial crimes. And my guest, Shehu Musa Gabam. It's his birthday today, by the way. Happy birthday, Mr. Gabam. I didn't realize that it was your birthday. Happy birthday. Before we get back to the guest, for those of you who are just joining us, we're talking about economic and financial crimes and how we can fight it. But then it looks like, from what my guest is saying, the clog in the wheels of this fight against corruption is the executive in cahoots with the judiciary. How do we get rid of this spanner in the wheel of things? Will we be ever able to get it out of the way? Because it looks like for every election cycle that we get to, things become more and more complicated, and we're more engulfed and wrapped up in, you know, a deeper and tougher level of corruption, which makes it look more like farther and farther away that we might be able to deal with corruption head on. Because you've already said that if we can take the hands of the executive out of it in cahoots with the judiciary, maybe we can make a headway. But how soon can that be, Mr. Garba?
It is extremely difficult for anyone to give an idea when we'll get rid of it. First, if the National Assembly can discharge its responsibility and oversight function, it is likely we'll get rid of it as soon as possible. But you can see the battles ahead of the National Assembly and the quality of the people in the National Assembly, the kind of issues they are trashing out that have to do with the public interest and the priority they have to deal with institutions that are weak and how to strengthen those institutions. So that suggests clearly that we have a very long way to go. If the National Assembly can repeal the act, you know, to overhaul the EFCC and an institution, ICPC and other investigative agencies, not only that, to strengthen the Nigerian police force that have experience over the years of investigation and so on and so forth, some of these things will fizzle out, and then you will see professionalism, you will see a clear case of prosecution that are factual based, not manufactured, no political hunting. But so long as we remain in the system that we are right now, the overriding power of determination or how long you exist on the seats is being determined by the president and commander-in-chief, then I don't think it is an easy exercise for anybody to expect. Just the way we are expecting a reform in INEC, it is almost closely to impossible. Because the executive appoint the INEC chairman, the executive appoint INEC commissioners, the executive appoint REC. So the entire executive election, it's not an independent election, it's an entire executive election. And the law says that INEC can deploy election materials if the environment is conducive. Now, who provides conducive environment is the executive. The president and commander-in-chief is in charge of deploying security agents to ensure there's conducive environment. So it's a gamut of problems that we have, and we are not dealing with them systematically to strengthen them from one institution to the other in the overall interest of the country. Because if we continue like this and we are waiting for investors to come into a country, that our level of fragility is unpredictable. Our level of focused and decisiveness to create deterrence is extremely very weak. Then I don't know how far we can go. But at least what I can say is that with the lot of pressure coming from the judiciary, I mean from the media organizations, a thorough investigation by media exposing some of these profiteering and racketeering around our system will go a long way. And of course, when you have patriotic people who believe in the existence of a nation, the strongest of the institution, we will survive it over a period of time. But for anybody to assume that in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see something around, we are just deceiving ourselves. We just have to keep on putting pressure on the executive to allow the independence of this institution that has been established by law to function and act decisively without interference of the executive. But right now, EFCC cannot function 100% without interference of the executive.
I want to put it to you. It's not that I'm contending with the fact that we need to put pressure, but how do we go about putting the pressure? Because as we speak, you and I know that there's a constitutional amendment that's going on without Nigerians. The National Assembly is taking the initiative, and that's because they're empowered by the law to do it. They can decide to either take us along or do it because they feel that they know what we want. But over time, again, we can tell that some of these people who are on the floor of the National Assembly do not necessarily represent our interests as a people. They don't necessarily, you know what we want because they're not asking us. They're not relating with us. Many of us don't even know where their constituency offices are to start with. So if we were to put pressure on them, how do we do it? Knowing that there's a constitutional amendment going on, if we were to say, well, this is what we want you to do when it comes to INEC, this is what we want you to do when it comes to the independence of the EFCC, how do we even go about it when we're not being allowed into the room?
It's simple. Me, you, and people like us must elect people who understand what it takes to be in the National Assembly. You cannot just elect someone who don't understand what even the what parliament is all about, who doesn't understand what it takes to sponsor a bill, who doesn't understand what it takes to debate issues that relate to national interest, strategic national interest. The large chunk of the people you have in the National Assembly have never appeared or stood up to speak on any issue, majority of them. Very few of them have that audacity. And then the fault comes from the people, because largely people vote according to what you give them. That is how low we have come. The monetization of the electoral process is extremely very high. So largely people were brought in on the basis of the cash available to them, the cash they can dish out. So you are producing a very low quality people in the parliament who doesn't understand the role of parliament. Look at the American parliament. Look at the British parliament. Look at how robust it is. Look at how they will call the president to order. This is the kind of parliament we're talking about. Now, the presidential system of government that we are operating, if you compare our parliament to the debate going on in the American parliament, how they are calling the president to order, how they are stopping the president, they have the power to impeach the president. That is the excessive power of the National Assembly. But so long as you continue to bring people on issue of it's my boy, you have to be there, you know, this process compromises the entire institution. It compromises the whole country as a whole. Unless we that are complaining, the younger people, understood the essence of putting quality people on a seat that is extremely very important for the country, extremely very important for our national development, for our evolution as a nation. It is a long way to go. We have to start from electing quality people into these strategic positions. Number two, it's not because they don't know the problem of the country, because they belong to the constituency before going there.
Mm-hmm.
But what happened was that when you have a National Assembly that is not thoroughly independent too, and they have not accepted that level of independence, so the entire process of deliberation somehow are being compromised by conflict of interest and so on and so forth. Look at the padding of the budget, the way it was managed, the way it went. You know, you see that it's like we are still experimenting. From 1999 to date, this democracy have produced grandchildren. But we are behaving as if we are still experimenting. So there must be a strong character at the helm of affairs of strategic positions, from the Senate President to Deputy Senate President to Principal Officer of the National Assembly. If they are not men of strong character, you cannot have anything going on in the National Assembly. If you have a strong members of the Senate, but they are not in a strategic position to push for a bill, it will hardly go through. They will kill it. So it's the multifaceted challenge that we are having. And then, of course, 70% of those who determine the president to the chancellor are youths. But what happened? What happened during the election? Who did what? What led us to where we are today? So we have to talk to ourselves first. We must admit that we are part of those who compromises the system. And it's biting us extremely very hard. So if we are to go outside this scale, we must tell ourselves that, look, we are part of those who compromise the system. And we must work out in a way and a manner that it will never happen again. Look at what happened in Senegal. Was it a miracle? It wasn't a miracle. People resolved to work together to bring a change that is dynamic, that is friendly, you know, that have changed the narrative of the entire Senegal as a nation. Nigeria can do it. The populated, registered voters are largely 70% young men and women. But are we using that power? The answer is no. What happened? Maybe we need to start sensitization. We need to start talking to ourselves. There is no private market for security agencies that are sacrificing their life for us, or even people. We all go to the same market, same hospitals, same schools. So it's tragic that we are not seeing all these as people who have traveled around the world. I've seen some of the best infrastructure, and we wish to have it at home. But because of some bureaucracy and because of absent-mindedness, we allow the system to get compromised. We underreport issues of reality.
I want to open up the phone lines because I know that there are those who would totally disagree with you that, look, the system is rigged against us. No matter what you tell us to do, these guys have the police, they have the army, they have the EFCC, they have the DSS.
No, no.
The system is rigged.
Some of us have led a revolution and we have succeeded.
Mm.
Yes, well, we did.
Well, let's open up the phone line. 0700-993-993-993 Lagos, join the conversation. We're talking about the fight against, of course, economic and financial crimes. Can the EFCC, will the EFCC ever be able to win this war? 0201465-7190, 0700-993-993-993. You could join the conversation via Skype if you're listening from outside of the country. We're Nigeria Info FM. We're also live facebook.com/Nigeria Info FM. Also live on YouTube. You can join the conversation. Post your live comment on the live feed. We will read your comment out on the show. Hello, welcome to Hard Facts. Sorry about that. Do call us back. Hello, welcome to Hard Facts.
Hi, Miriam.
Yes.
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Ovoli calling from Ikorodu.
Go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Happy birthday. So, like,
thank you so much.
Thank you. Your guest. It's indeed obvious that everything now is rigged against the poor. If I were to be the one, probably the EFCC is looking for now, it would be so fast. They come to my doorstep, pick me, and prosecute me immediately.
Mrs. Oboli, I'm so sorry. Do call us back if you can. Hello. Mm-hmm.
I greet you and I greet our guest.
Yes, go ahead.
Marian, I have been voting since 1999, last year. I have never collected half a liter of rice in my life. I can use my life to put on the line that 150 million Nigerian youth have never collected anything. Marian, Nigerian youth are not the IMEX. Senegal have a working and independent IMEX. Majority of Nigerian leaders are voted by IMF, not us. So the agents cannot include me, say, and they collect Tatase or Mango or Pia to vote. IMF is our problem.
Okay.
Including Nigerian judiciary.
Okay.
And they vote for here. And
okay. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Hello. Welcome to Hard Facts.
Good evening, my dear sister.
Good evening.
Yeah, Kimbo is my name.
Go ahead, please.
Honestly, I'm just sorry for the head of the EFCC because at the end of the day, that man will be frustrated. You see, the problem, the fact that the institution has even returned the money is enough grounds to try this man now because that is a concrete evidence against him. But beyond that, what we need in Nigeria are strong institutions and not just powerful individuals that will come on board in a particular institution, perform for 3 or 4 years, as soon as it's out of the place, the institution goes down again. We need strong institutions. Look at the last general elections in America. Trump was prepared to truncate that election. He quickly went to a Supreme Court in one of the states, wanting to stop the release of the results. But the justice in that court looked at him in the face and said, sir, you don't have enough ground, so your prayers will not be heard. Can it happen in Nigeria, telling a sitting president that his prayers will not be heard in this place? So what we need are institutions.
Okay.
Institutions.
Okay.
That's the only way. Otherwise, we'll remain in this mess.
Thank you very much for calling. There's a question for you, Mr. Gabam. Simon here from Lekki says, why is your guest blaming the electorate? Has he forgotten that it is INEC and the judiciary that puts politicians in political office? He says you should stop blaming the electorate. Would you mind responding?
No, certainly. I think he didn't. The first time we have talked about but I'm saying, look at the Electoral Act and the processes. It gives vote, protects its votes, and then
you're breaking, Mr. Gabam. We can barely hear you. I don't know if people are calling you, but you're breaking, and we can barely hear you.
Are you hearing me?
Yes, we can hear you now. You're going on enough. You're going on enough.
I think it's from your end. Then Are you hearing me now?
We can hear you. It's just that we can hear you for a minute and then it will go off and then it'll come up. So you're missing some of your words. I'm missing.
In that I'm not blaming the voters because you can.
Oh, no.
Or who collected. What I'm saying is that the poverty level, the vote buying system in the nation.
Mr. Gabam, I'm so sorry. You're breaking up, and we cannot actually make anything that you're saying out because it's just breaking. All your words are going off. They're going into. I don't know what we can do about it. But let me just take one quick call, and then maybe hopefully the internet will stabilize and we can hear you. Hello, welcome to Hard Facts. You have 60 seconds.
Good evening, Miriam.
Good evening.
My name is Prince Wise, calling you from Amoru.
Prince, go ahead. You have 60 seconds.
60 seconds. I think the electoral law in this country is a little too big, perfect. You need to do more. But the politics are had a problem. Both parties, joint of the political, a potential election gap. Only the Macari girl will be the winner. I'm not here for you. They will clear class how that do the same thing. Look at primary elections going on in some states now. Look at Trigger. So for me, Nigeria, we have the institution. Can we maintain the institution? Can we obey the law? Can we follow the law? Can those in charge of implementation of the law?
Okay.
The right thing?
All right. I have to let you go. I'm so sorry. It's because we do not have any more time. Mr. Gabam, because we have 60 seconds before we wrap up this conversation, quickly, you wanted to respond to, you know, the question of the electorates, and some people think that you are actually blaming us for what's happening through the executive and the judiciary.
I think you need to understand the Electoral Act.
Oh dear.
This is the right to cast vote. Now, it has happened in so many states of the vote, state around. Now, in every polling unit, let me give you the officials that will be there. The security agents.
Mr. Gabam, I'm so sorry. I have to really apologize. The network is doing you in and we can barely hear anything you have to say. But I want to thank you so I can let you go. I see that you have friends over for your birthday. Have a happy birthday. Thank you for joining us on the show. Hopefully next time when we have you back, the internet will be friendly enough to take your responses. Sheu Musa Gabam is the national chairman of the Social Democratic Party, SDP, and he joined us live via Zoom. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful birthday.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Well, Lagos, there you have it. We're going to go on a break. And when we come back on the other side, I'm going to be saying my goodbyes and thanking you for being part of the conversation. Tomorrow is another day, but we'll go on this break. If I can read one or two messages before we wrap up, I will do so. But let's take a quick break and we'll be right back. Can I read a quick message? Okay, so this one says, our arms of government are in a hole. The legislature, executive, and the worst being the judiciary. He says the executive and the blood-sucking politicians have bought our arms of government in this part of the world until a revolution takes place. Nothing will ever work in Nigeria. Gosun Idowu from Satellite Sound, thank you for your message. We'll go on a break. When we come back, I'll read the other messages and then we'll be wrapping up on this side on the Big Hard Facts. Stay with us.